basement. It's the Kyle Selagi Variety Hour. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Kyle Selagi Variety Hour, brought to you by USA Today Sports Media Group's Bills Wire. We have a jam-packed episode for you today. We're going to be talking about the good and the bad from the Buffalo Bills Week 3 preseason snooze fest against the Detroit Lions. It was just an awful game, but we're going to talk about it for an hour, so that'll be fun. And then we're going to talk a little bit about Andrew Luck, because there was some shocking Andrew Luck news. This comes out on Tuesday, so everyone knows about it by now. But yeah, Andrew Luck retired. We'll talk about that. And also, we'll be debuting a new segment that I haven't told Rich about yet, but Rich is going to host it. So,
oh, no.
There you go, Rich. Speaking of Rich, I have guests here. It's the usual. It's the crew. And it's D'Lo and Rich. How are you guys?
Doing phenomenal.
Good. Again, I set you guys up for it.
Yeah, you always set us up to talk over each other. I love
it. It's Justin DeLauro, Rich Kowalski. I don't know if I said I'm Kyle Selagi, but the name is the Kyle Selagi Variety Hour. It's implied at this point that I am Kyle Selagi. But yeah, let's get into it, because it's going to be a hefty podcast, I'm sure, because we have six different talking points in one segment, plus all these additional segments. It's just it's a real circus every week here, but you know, you gotta love it. People love it. We had our best podcast ever last week, and Rich wasn't here, so I don't know. Maybe I should have brought Jeremy back, but yeah, we'll give it a go.
Is there a correlation between that?
Yeah, maybe. We'll give this one more go, though. We'll give this crew another try. But before I throw to you, Rich, for your new segment that I've just thought of a tentative name for, until we think of a better name. Well, I can't even ask you to think of a name, because you don't know what the segment is, but I want to do a quick preface here. We're recording this every week. There's a preface about the day we're recording, but we're recording this on Sunday afternoon, and there are reports from multiple reporters, that makes sense, that Jadeveon Clowney is going to be traded either today or tomorrow, either Sunday or Monday. So hopefully, my fingers are crossed that he gets traded within the next hour here, so we can get our actual live reactions to the trade, no matter where it's to, because that would be really fun. Mm-hmm. But if he gets traded tonight or Monday at some point and we don't talk about it, it's because, hey, it's Sunday afternoon right now. Let's just predict. Where does Clowney go and what does he get traded for, guys?
Ooh. I mean, you got to see a first come in some way.
Mm-hmm.
At least one. I mean, with Lamar Miller injured, maybe they ask for a running back, which is something the Bills have an abundance of.
Oh, are you thinking the Bills are in?
No.
Bills in on Clowney? Breaking news?
That'll be the headline on the podcast.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, they got to get at least a first, possibly multiple firsts out of this too. I just see them asking for a lot with Clowney. And, I mean, he's got like a $16 million cap hit, so... Right, it's something obscene coming up. So I think, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see which team kind of puts all their chips in to go forward with Clowney.
I see this as a quintessential Dan Snyder blockbuster move that you're going to kind of scratch your head at.
Let's go Redskins!
See like three or four first-round picks being thrown around for no reason.
That would be so much fun.
That would be a fun thing.
Throwing over Trent Williams, maybe back to Houston. I don't know. Mean,
they have two running backs, too.
Yeah, they do.
They have.
Who knows? Darius Geis is coming back
healthy.
Could
be going out.
Bryce Love, AP.
They've got a lot there. I don't know. There's a lot
of pieces.
They
have Bryce Love, right? Maybe I just made that up. I think they have Bryce Love. A quick Google if Bryce Love is actually on the Redskins. He is. He's on the Redskins. There we go. Bryce Love.
That was pretty good.
I'm thinking this is a Miami move. They're the linked team. I think it's them and Baltimore, really, that the two heaviest pursuers, that's a word, I think, most heavily in pursuit of Jadeveon Clowney. And there's another report that Miami is not really in love with their current roster at all, that, like, everyone is available for trade. So I could see, like, Kenyon Drake.
Drake.
That'd be great.
Kenyon Drake. That Kenyon Drake for Clowney plus picks, or like Laremy Tunsil. I mean, that's just a what are you doing Miami trade, but that seems like a trade they would make.
Yeah, that definitely seems like a trade they make. And that could also, like, you know, we've seen these teams that drafted quarterbacks, you know, 2 years ago try to make big moves. And now, you know, Miami has Josh Rosen potentially as their starting quarterback. We don't even know yet.
We'll see what happens.
Will it be another move where, you know, the Jets went for Le'Veon Bell in the offseason, make that move? Browns have made a bunch of signings. Could this be Miami's kind of move to get into, you know, take the next step? I don't know.
I wonder if a bunch of AFC teams right now are just like, oh, with Luck no longer on the Colts, that's kind of a playoff spot opening up.
Yes.
So if we were a bubble team, we can make a big move for a Clowney or someone else and try to sneak into the playoffs. But that's not the transition, because now I have to throw it to Rich with his new segment, tentatively named Premier Rich.
Oh, no.
Rich, Premier League recap for this week, match round 3. I didn't even know they were called match rounds in the Premier League until I read the guide today, and it said match round 3. I was like, what the hell is a match round?
Sometimes they're called match weeks.
Match week 3. Rich, give us the recap of Premier League match week 3.
Do I want to? I guess Tottenham match aside, you know, which they just lost to Newcastle.
Not great.
It was kind of interesting to see Man United lose to Crystal Palace first time. That happened since the 90s. Man City handled Liverpool, handled Arsenal. So that, I guess that's a consolation prize for Spurs fans. Arsenal still losing, which is great. Big rivals there. But nothing really new. You know, it's kind of a bummer, Tottenham. I don't even want to talk about it.
What was the final score? 1-0?
Yeah, it was 1-0.
Nice.
Just no spark, no real threat from Spurs.
They did have opportunities.
They did have opportunities, but
it wasn't
really,
you know, like they possessed had a couple, the ball probably 80% of the game.
A couple close calls too that may have gone Spurs' way potentially another day, where, you know, there could have been penalties called that weren't. But at the end of the day, they just didn't do enough to win.
Home versus Newcastle.
Yeah.
And you not couldn't
good
pull
too.
It out.
Yeah.
Week from today, too, they play Arsenal at the Emirates Stadium.
At the Emirates.
And that's Newcastle's only points of the season so far on the table.
Yeah.
Nice.
Ooh. How do you like that? Yeah.
Fun story. Their coach, Steve Bruce, I believe his name is. He's coached, I think, this is his 10th team he's managed.
Yeah.
And at one point, I think it was about 4 years ago, at one of the teams he was managing, he got a cabbage thrown at his face from a fan. he was so hated by the fans that someone brought a cabbage to the game and chucked it at his face.
Newcastle's just a weird team.
They really are.
Like, we're not going to spend too long on this because nobody cares. I actually had somebody tweet Bill's Wire tweeted out the podcast last week, and somebody responded, if you don't want to listen to any Sabre stuff, just go 15 minutes in. And I was like, I love our fans. I love it. They're
looking out for each other.
Yeah, they're giving timestamps to each other. So there we go. But Newcastle, I mean, earlier this year, Newcastle fans were on top of the world because they had Rafa Benitez as their manager still. They were supposed to be taken over by a billionaire, the cousin of Manchester City's owner. So it was Newcastle United was supposed to be the next big team. But here they are. None of that happened. And now they lost Rafa Benitez and now a relegation candidate. But they still beat Spurs. So good on the Spurs.
Another side note on the Newcastle here too is one of their strikers, Almiron, came from Atlanta United in January, so a little MLS connection there. Signed for, I think it was like a record MLS signing or something.
$10
of like 18 million, something absurdly low.
Yeah, that's hey. Anyways, hey, it's
there's
still
next
fun.
Week. Next week's a bigger match for Spurs.
Yeah,
the North London Derby.
The North London Derby. And we're still early on here, so
yeah,
3 weeks in. But West Ham won, so I'm happy. Good weekend for me. And I think that's all the soccer talk this week. I was going to bring up something about the Bundesliga, but it completely slipped my mind, so we're not going to talk about that.
Do they have Hofbräuhaus in Bundesliga stadiums? Bundesliga.
They should. They should.
I think it's one of those Americanized things that probably they don't even have in Germany.
From what I understand, I did a very, very minimal research of Hofbräuhaus. It is a restaurant in Munich. Hmm. And American soldiers went there during World War II and came back with mugs that said HB on it. And Americans were like, ooh, what's that mug? And so it kind of became more popular in America than it is in Germany, like you said. But, hey, yeah, that's the Hofbräuhaus update for this week because there's nothing new. It's August 25th and there's no new Hofbräuhaus Buffalo updates, even though it's supposed to open this month. Unfortunately, it doesn't look like that's going to happen. But let's talk about Andrew Luck here, because we've talked about other things for 10 minutes. So, Andrew Luck, I'll throw to you guys in a few moments here to get your takes on Andrew Luck. Of course, the 29-year-old quarterback who's been injured for much of the last few years here. He played last year. He was very good. But, again, he's been dealing with injuries for quite some time now. And, of course, he retired last night. During the Indianapolis preseason game, Adam Schefter broke the news that Andrew Luck had informed the Colts he was retiring, and that 2 weeks before the regular season, Indianapolis lost their franchise quarterback for good. I think everything that can be said about Andrew Luck has already been said about Andrew Luck. He's a class act on and off the field, one of the most team-oriented and just good guys in the NFL, I think. He's seriously just... When you think of what you want in a franchise quarterback, you kind of think of Andrew Luck, just with the talent, the community involvement, just and being a good guy in general. That's what Andrew Luck is. And for me, my biggest problem with this was the fan reaction to this. Because like I said, this news broke during an Indianapolis preseason game. And then he went onto the sideline with his teammates for the final time. His last time he'll ever, unless he comes back, but Andrew Luck doesn't strike me as the type that's going to pull a Brett Favre and come back in 2 years. But this was the last time that Andrew Luck is ever going to share the sideline with his teammates as an Indianapolis Colt. And what do some Indianapolis fans do as he leaves the field for the final time? They boo him. That was seriously disgusting, because think back to 2012. Andrew Luck was highly touted. Everyone thought he was going to be good, but he still had an impossible task. In Indianapolis, he wasn't taking over for just another quarterback. He wasn't taking over for just another franchise quarterback or long-term starter. He was taking over for a player who many believe is the best quarterback of all time. He had to make Colts fans forget about Peyton Manning, and he did that. He was seriously the face of that franchise for many years, and to see fans, even though, I mean, again, I think it's wrong to think his reason for retiring is weak. I've seen some people tweet that, like, oh, you're tired of rehabbing and you're going to retire. Well, like, A, it's his health, it's his life, he can do what he wants. He's 29, he owes nothing to the Colts anymore. And if he's not committed to the game and he can get out with some semblance of health still intact, yes, get out of the league. But to see Colts fans boo him, their franchise quarterback, who he's been nothing but grateful for, and he's represented them on a national scale so well, and to see the parting gesture of booing, that kind of rubbed me the wrong way. But I'll go to you, Rich. What do you think about this whole Andrew Luck news here?
I mean, I think it's the amount of courage it had to take to retire at the age of 29 when you're the center of the franchise, you're their quarterback, and you're the face of them. It takes a hell of a lot of courage to do that, and I don't blame him for doing that. You know, he's had how many injuries? He's torn a cartilage in two ribs. He has a partially torn abdomen, a lacerated kidney that left him pissing blood. He had at least one concussion. He had a torn labrum in his throwing shoulder, and then he had a calf and ankle injury that has, you know, where we are today.
Right, yeah.
It's absurd for fans, especially in Indianapolis, to boo him off the field. I think it's absolutely disgusting. I will say also, too, I partially blame Adam Schefter for tweeting that out during the game. I don't think he understood the type of reaction that could cause, you know, with Colts fans in the crowd. And I don't think Andrew Luck has a flip phone. He's not looking at Twitter seeing who's tweeting about his retirement. So it's just absolutely disgusting by the Colts fans to do that for a guy that dedicated his body you know, to their franchise, yeah, to come out and boo him is just wrong.
Literally gave them his body and they booed him. D'Lo, what do you think?
I mean, maybe they would have been happier if he would have Vontae Davis'd it and just left at halftime in the first game. I mean, it makes sense. Like, he probably was agonizing over the decision. I obviously can't get into his body and, you know, psychoanalyze him, but I imagine this wasn't a very easy decision, and he's doing it now probably because the team still has a little time to kind of figure things out, and, you know, after the initial shock of the announcement, they'll be able to kind of move forward in week one. He hasn't been playing. He hasn't been practicing. They've had Jacoby Brissett playing with the first team anyway. It's not an ideal situation, but it's probably the right one for him if physically and emotionally and psychologically he's just not where he wants to be. So, I mean, that's probably fine. It's a tough thing. I mean, all the people bitching about drafting him in fantasy drafts, like, come on.
Yeah,
like,
relax.
Give me a friggin' break. Like, go on the waiver wire and pick up Jameis Winston. Like, I get it. Like, all right, you know, like, our fandom needs to kind of, like, get back to, like, a level of humanity. And I can understand why Colts fans would be upset, but at the same time, what are they going to do? They're going to burn his jersey. Oh, I don't like him anymore. Like, give me a break. Like, it's just frustrating. And I was on the fence about Schefter reporting it, because at first I was like, dude, why couldn't this wait a little bit? But, I mean, his job is to break news, so it's just hard that this is the news that was kind of figured out at that time. The thing I'm wondering is, when did Schefter find out that Luck was really considering this? You know, if it's something that was in the afternoon, is this something that should have been announced at the afternoon? That's the only thing. I think it's tough because at first I was thinking, you know, journalistically, is this, you know, like an ethics thing on Schefter? But then it's like, no, it's his job to break stuff. And unfortunately, the fourth quarter of a Colts game was going on, and probably fans were just totally hit, you know, in the face and you know, shockingly, so they didn't know how to completely react to it. So then we end up having this booing situation, which really just makes everything just seem terrible. And then rather than being able to actually address it at a press conference, he has to do it after the game.
Mm-hmm.
So now there's probably some prepared remarks that he was going to make, and it was probably going to be a little more eloquent, and now he has to kind of get forced out in front of, you know, some of these journalists and reporters who are now going to really try hard to look for a story, because now all of the Indianapolis Colts and national guys, or Colts reporters and national guys, are going to try and create, you know, their version of this story. So it's going to be interesting. It's going to die out down over the next few weeks. The Colts are going to go play their fourth game in the preseason, and none of their starters are going to play anyway, and they're just going to have to, you know, Frank Reich's going to have to take the team, you know, reformat them, reconfigure everything, get their minds back on track, and realize that Jacoby Brissett's going to be their guy, and he's giving Chad Kelly a spot on the roster. So, good job, Andrew.
And you look at, too, the, you know, the history of players retiring around this age, too. You had Barry Sanders retired at 29. You had, who was it else? Calvin Johnson retired at 30. There's a lot of other players that have done this
before. I mean, Jim Brown retired around this age.
Exactly.
I mean, it's
exactly.
Nothing new.
And on the side, Andrew Luck also has a degree in engineering, or a degree in architecture from Stanford
University.
School of Engineering.
Yeah, he'll figure it out.
I think
he'll
be
okay.
He'll be fine. And then there was a thing today where the Colts could have recouped like $25 million from him, but they're letting him keep it, which that's a good sign there from the Colts. That's a class act. Jim Irsay. One of the few class acts from Jim Irsay. But
he's a greasy dude.
Yeah, he's just a greasy guy. But, yeah, Andrew Luck, like I said, he strikes me as a team-first guy. I honestly feel like if he wasn't confident in Jacoby Brissett, he probably would have stuck around for a year. I could be wrong there, but I feel like that probably played a role in it, where he's like, am I leaving the Colts in good hands? Will the team be okay without me? And I think they will be okay with Jacoby Brissett and Frank Reich. People are saying that the Colts are going to tank either this year or next year, end up with Tua or Trevor Lawrence. I think Frank Reich is too good of a head coach to end up going 3-13 or 4-12. I just don't foresee that happening on any team that Frank Reich is the head coach of. But I think that kind of sums up the Andrew Luck talk here. It's sad. It really is, just because he was one of the better quarterbacks in the league when healthy. He was fun to watch, just a genuinely good guy, somebody who you could root for. And I was excited about the Colts. I said throughout the entire offseason, I mean, the Bills and the Colts had, out of the whole league, I think they were 1 and 2 in cap space. The Jets might have been 2, and the Bills were 3. But either way, the Colts, I think, had the most cap space. And I said all along, if I'm an offensive playmaker, which is what the Bills were targeting this offseason, if I'm an offensive playmaker, I want to sign with Indy over Buffalo. Mm-hmm. Just because, say what you will about Josh Allen, but Andrew Luck's the better quarterback. And say what you will about Sean McDermott, but Frank Reich's the better offensive coach. I think if for offensive playmakers, Indy was the more exciting team. And now, just like that, they're without their quarterback. But they still have a good coach. I think Indy, I don't know. They were a playoff team before. I don't know if they're a playoff team now. But I still think they'll be a solid team. And it's just sad that Andrew Luck, no longer going to be an NFL quarterback. But, hey, his dad's the XFL commissioner. So maybe... Maybe the New York Guardians have their new signal caller.
I mean, he is an architect. He is an architect.
He's going to build the league there from the ground up.
Go for it.
No, continue.
Oh, I was completely unrelated. Do I bid on an Andrew Luck jersey on eBay?
Is it like a good one? Or is it like just the numbers are printed onto the jersey itself?
It's looking authentic.
If the numbers are stitched, then yes.
All right.
But,
Because these are popping up easily.
Yeah, you can get one for $10. But we would talk about the XFL team names just because there are some doozies, but we're 20 minutes in. So,
Let's get to the Bills.
All right, we have the good and the bad from the Bills preseason game. I almost got into a rap there. That would have been fun. But So we'll throw to you, D'Lo. Or first, let me explain the segment. We each have 3 good takeaways from the game and 3 bad. We probably could each have like 10 bad and have like 30 bad and 3 good because that's more so what actually happened. But we're going to limit it to 3 good, 3 bad per, no.
One each.
There we go. Thanks, D'Lo. You're the teacher.
I got you. I got you.
Thank you.
Because you know what? I didn't have 3 written down, so that's why I got worried.
Right. That'd be so many. This would be a 3-hour, it'd be the Ooh. Kyle Selege variety 3 hours. So, D'Lo, we'll go to you with your good. We'll start on a good note here. What is your good takeaway from this week's game?
First, I like the way the defense is playing. They still look like they can be a top 5 defense. I think the front 4 is looking pretty good right now. Ed Oliver's looked okay. I've seen starter Latulele look a little more active than the past, so the interior of the line's looking good. I'd love to see a little bit more from Trent Murphy, but when he's been out there, it looks like he's been okay. Shaq Lawson's done okay in reserve role. Mm-hmm. I thought Tremaine Edmonds had a pretty good game last game. I thought he was kind of all over the field flying. He had 8 tackles in, you know, less than a half, so that was nice. The secondaries looked okay with their depth. So overall, I'm happy with this unit thus far. You saw that they had a little bit of a challenge playing against Matt Stafford, the only starting quarterback they've seen thus far, but they were able to kind of bend but not break. One of the fourth downs, they allowed a touchdown, and it was a tough route that Matt Milano had to chase a running back out of the backfield on a wheel route, but it was kind of a tough play, well drawn up play by the Lions. But the next time, fourth down, they were able to shut it down. So overall, I think defensively, once again, this team is going to be led by Sean McDermott's defense, to be redundant.
Yeah, defensively led by the defense.
Defensively led by the defense.
I thought it was a very good defensive game all around, at least for the first team. Tremaine Edmonds is my good takeaway, so I'll kind of
do it.
I'll wait a little bit. I'll hold off. I'll get to Tremaine in a few minutes and just talk about the rest here. They did allow Matt Stafford to complete 12 passes for 137 yards and a half of football, which, like you said, it was bend, don't break. I think they only found the end zone once. So that's reassuring, at least. And like you said, they found the end zone on a well-drawn play. But overall, I thought it was a good defensive showing. Trent Murphy. Trent Murphy has looked good this preseason. I've seen some people saying he's in for a career year. And, like, it doesn't have to be a career year. Just, like, 8 sacks I'm good with.
Yeah, just be anything. Be on the field.
Yeah, be on the field. And he has looked good. I think he had the spin move last week, and now he's just disruptive at the line of scrimmage. We know about Jerry Hughes. Ed Oliver, a lot of people have been saying he's looked unstoppable. I don't think that's true. He's been stopped because he hasn't had a sack. But
I mean, he's been good, but it hasn't
been... He's been good, right.
Yeah, he's a rookie. He looks like a rookie, but he's definitely an upgrade on the interior of that line.
Exactly, and that's something that people will say, that Ed Oliver has looked great in this. It's like, no, he's looked okay. But that, like you said, he's a rookie. You don't expect him to step in and be an all-pro or a pro bowler or just a star. No, you want just a base in the rookie year. I don't care what position you play, what selection you were picked with. You just want the rookie to establish a base in their first year, something they can build off moving forward, which Tremaine Edmonds did last year. We'll get into that. But I think... Yeah, overall, I was pleased with the defense. Matt Milano, he was the one who got beat. He got beat on one play, but I thought he looked solid. Lorenzo, Trey White got injured, but again, he's looked good. Levi Wallace, it's a very good defense. As I said last week, I think they are going to finish first in total yardage, and they showed this week that yes, they are for real, albeit in two quarters of a preseason game, they showed they're for real, which I guess that's really all you want to see in the preseason is just hopeful signs. So, Rich, what is your good takeaway?
I'd say the Bills' depth looked really good on Friday night. You know, you had Matt Barkley coming in the second half. He's looked really good so far in the preseason. I think the last two preseason games, he's 20-24. He's thrown two touchdowns. He's looking pretty good, actually. Good to have that security behind Josh Allen. And then on the defense, too, Shaq Lawson has looked really good. I don't know if he's going to be in the rotation, you know, with the first team, but he could be. I mean, he's looked pretty decent in this preseason. He's gotten after the quarterback. Jordan Phillips looked pretty good. Bills secondary, even though they were a little battered, Tre'Davious White came out for a bit. Levi Wallace came out for a bit, then re-entered. You had guys behind him that looked capable, and they have that depth that they haven't had the last few off seasons or the last few preseasons in general. You had so many raw players the last few years, and even just last year, super young team. And then, you know, this preseason, you've had guys that are coming in the game that are veteran, you know, backups going in there, and rather than these young guys, the depth has looked really good. But yeah, overall sloppy game though.
Sloppy game. Yeah, depth is something the Bills haven't had since this regime took over, and you can say that was kind of the plan. I guess that might be their plan, is just be cheap, get the cap figured out, and then starting in 2019 is when you try to be competitive. You build a complete roster for the first time. Even though they made the playoffs in 2017, that roster was not deep at all. Wasn't even that talented, but hey, that works when you have a good coach and a weak conference. But yeah, it is very reassuring to see that this team finally has some depth. Players that were seeing significant playing time in previous years are now fighting for roster spots. Exactly. They're playing deep in the preseason. The signings and the draft picks and things like that, the moves that this regime has made to improve the roster has pushed these players who previously saw significant playing time down the depth chart. You think of Eddie Yarborough, a rotational defender in the past 2 years, was the team's fourth defensive end, saw significant playing time in some games, now playing in the fourth quarter of a preseason game, just trying to inch his way onto the roster. Isaiah McKenzie, very good last year. I like Isaiah McKenzie, but he's fighting for a roster spot. I think he's had two carries in the preseason, or two plays, two big plays at least. And then just, yeah, in general, there's depth on this team to the point where if a player goes down, I'm not scared, or I am still concerned, but it's like, okay, we have depth players. Like if Levi Wallace or Trey White goes down, Kevin Johnson's there to take over. If Matt Milano goes down, Corey Thompson's there. You know, there's depth all over this roster, which is it's reassuring, especially for a team that wants to make a push for the playoffs, that if you do lose a starter, a talented starter, one of your key players, you're going to have a player in there that is going to make the transition a little more easy to cope with. D'Lo, do you have anything to add about the depth of this roster?
No, I just like, for the first time, like when we get down to like the 53 man, we're, you know, like that 45 to 53 range, we're going to be sweating it out to figure out how they're going to construct this roster. So that's big. And just with the depth last year, sometimes somebody would come in and you'd be like, are we playing with 10 men? So yeah. This is a nice change.
Yeah, like speaking of 10 men, Corey Thompson was awful last year. He came in when Milano got hurt, I do believe. Yeah, Thompson came in, and he was not great, but this year in training camp and preseason, he's looked better, which is, you know, that just speaks to the quality of this regime, I think, is they can find these players, Levi Wallace, Corey Thompson, these undrafted guys, not highly looked at, and then just put them in a position to succeed, give them a year to develop, and they will develop into role players on this team. So, yeah, that just speaks to the ability of this regime to find players and turn them into either quality starters or rotational guys. So that's reassuring to see. And speaking of the quality of this regime, they found their guy. They found the quarterback of their defense, and he showed that in this preseason game. Tremaine Edmonds, as you said, D'Lo, was all over the field in this game. And this is my positive takeaway, my good, if you will. Tremaine Edmonds, seriously, in this game, I wrote an article for it on Bills Wire. He showed he's arrived. I said on a previous episode that Tremaine Edmonds' best game last year came in Week 17, and if he can string together a few more of those performances, he'll be a Pro Bowler this year. This was one of those performances. It was in the preseason, but seriously, he was all over the field. He was consistently meeting ball carriers at the line of scrimmage. He was, like, seriously, no matter where the ball was, within seconds, Tremaine Edmonds was there to make a play. If a ball was caught in his vicinity, he was taking down the pass catcher right there, allowing no yards after the catch. He was just sideline to sideline, all over the field, roaming the field with ease, which I wrote in my article. So you can read that on Bills Wire. And then just, I have sensed a new confidence in Tremaine Edmonds. I have. Looking back at last year, just thinking about last year, Tremaine was solid, but he wasn't flashy. I think back to plays or players that I noticed on almost every play. I think of Matt Milano. Lorenzo Alexander at 35 years of age was always around the ball making a play. Just those type of guys, right? Tremaine every once in a while would come up with a play, but he wasn't a guy that I noticed every single down. Throughout this preseason, I think I've noticed Tremaine Edmonds on every defensive play he's been out there for. It's seriously like the defense now just kind of gravitates around him. He is seriously the guy in that defense, which for a 21-year-old to be that guy that you can look at and say, yep, he's the guy. He's the leader of that defense. It all goes through him. He's going to be there on every single play, no matter if he's making a tackle, trying to, you know, come up with a pick, whatever. He's the guy. He is the leader of that defense. So I think that's very reassuring to see, albeit, again, in a preseason game, in a half of a preseason game, Tremaine Edmonds showed that he's arrived. He is the leader of that defense. It only took this regime a year to nurture him into their Luke Kuechly, but I think he's already at that level, and he's only going to improve as time goes on here. So, Rich, anything to add about Tremaine Edmonds?
Yeah, I mean, he looks like a different player than last year. Last year, he kind of looked like he was getting his footing. He was still so young. You know, this last preseason game, he led the team in tackles, had a tackle for a loss. He seemed like he was much more energized out there. He had much more swagger than he did last year. It's good to see that he's getting his confidence and getting his feet under him, because he's going to be such a staple for the Bills' defense in these next few years, which are crucial.
Yeah, and I wrote in my article, I'm really plugging this article, please go read it. It was an okay piece. But, like, last year, at times he looked like a fish out of water. He was never, like, you never pointed at Tremaine and said, he is the weak link in this defense. He was always solid. He's too talented to ever be the weak link in a unit. But you think back to last year, not only was he adjusting to being the youngest player in the National Football League, not only was he adjusting to not only being the quarterback and the centerpiece of a defense, but transitioning to that position from outside linebacker at Virginia Tech, but also, like, 8 or 9 weeks into his rookie year, when he's still trying to figure everything out, how to be an NFL player at 20 years of age in a city he's never been to, you know, different part of the country, and just transitioning to this whole new life, a new position, the leader of the team, the guy who's been here for 13 years, just kind of comes up to you and is like, okay, this is your defense now. This is your unit. You're going to be running the team meetings. You are the guy now, because I'm leaving. So you're the guy. Just imagine how much of a whirlwind that must have been for him in his rookie year. I mean, I was 20 years old 2 years ago. I could barely stay home alone and let my dogs out. I could not, I wouldn't trust myself with that. And Tremaine Edmonds is here. Just, you know, that was obviously a bit of an exaggeration. I knew how to let my dogs out. Still do, so I'm growing up. But Tremaine Edmonds, just seriously, just the amount of responsibility he had in his rookie year is insane. Even more so than Josh Allen. Tremaine Edmonds, that responsibility is insane. And he still led the defense to the, you know, finished second in total yardage and the best against the pass. So it's just insane what he was able to accomplish as a relatively raw player in his rookie year. And still, he's only going to improve, which is that's very exciting. It's very exciting. Anyone have anything to add about the guy Tremaine?
He's good.
Thank you. I do agree with that. Good opinion, D'Lo.
Thank you.
You basically summed up my 10 minutes of talking.
He's a good player.
Yeah, he's real good. Who started? I think it was you, Rich, right? You started with this whole... Oh, no, it was D'Lo who started with the whole rundown.
Yeah.
There we go. My short-term memory isn't the best, but I can remember that Tremaine Edmonds is good. So, D'Lo, we'll go to you. We'll go to the bad.
Okay.
What for you was bad about this game, besides all of it?
Yeah, the game was wretched. But I'm still a little worried about our offense. I mean, the first two games, the timing routes looked like they were in sync. And then last week was easily the most inconsistent week that we've seen. And if last week was supposed to be kind of the dress rehearsal, closest thing to what the regular season's going to look like, I mean, the passing game was just a bit of a wreck. I mean, unless... I'm going to tire because I don't know if Brian Daboll really said, you know, last week was going to be all about the run game. But Allen was only 3 of 6 on the day. He only completed one pass up until that 2-minute offense thing at the end of the first half. So I'm a little worried. It was a little disconcerting to see him and Cole Beasley be so out of sync on a ball, a couple balls maybe. So still a little worried about the offense, if they'll be able to pull their weight. It was nice to see the run game get some good things going. But once again, you saw LeSean McCoy largely rely on a chunk play. We saw Frank Gore get a chunk play. So it's not like necessarily that they're getting 4 or 5 yards every time. It's really, you know, 1, 2, 3 yards followed by 1, 2, 3 followed by, you know, a chunk play. So hopefully they can find a bit more consistency within that and then get back on track through the air, especially against the Jets in week 1, because the Jets defense is going to be, it's going to be obviously tougher than anything they see in the preseason, but, you know, against Detroit's defense, they had some massive struggles. So
yeah,
it's definitely a little worrisome about what that next step will be. They have a couple weeks to get it in order, obviously, but obviously the Jets will have a couple weeks to get their defense aligned to what they're going to do to Josh Allen. So there's going to be a little bit of work to do. So they're going to have to figure it out, because last week was eye opening. We saw hero ball come back. We saw fumbles. We saw just a lot of out of sync play, and the rhythm just was not there.
Yeah. The game plan last week, I guess. Yeah. Week 3, whatever. Was obviously to focus on the ground, get LeSean McCoy and Frank Gore carries. And that all offseason, we've thought about that as a very intriguing attack, with LeSean McCoy being the more shifty guy, Frank Gore is going to run you over, and then they'll throw in Devin Singletary from time to time to do whatever. But albeit in one half of preseason action, that did not look promising. They had nothing going on the ground. Frank Gore, like you said, his stats, 8 attempts for 57 yards, that looks pretty good, but also what, like 30 or 40 of those yards came on one run?
Yeah, 27 yard run.
Yeah, exactly. So that's it. That was a stat patter right there. That's a that's a tongue twister, stat patter. But yeah, it was a stat padding run, because again, that suggests that he was better than he was. He wasn't bad, but just the offense in general couldn't get anything going. My bad takeaway, I'll just transition to it now, because that's the majority of my my talking points for the offense is Josh Allen. He was bad. I'll say it. He was bad in this game. You look at the stat line, three completions on 6 attempts for 49 yards. That doesn't look bad, but like you said, D'Lo, I think 2 of those came on the 2-minute drill at the end. at the end of the half, he was one of whatever
he was one of four leading in, and the incompletions were just, they were rugged.
Mm-hmm. And what I really want to talk about here is the hero ball that you mentioned. I think it was in the second quarter. He took the snap. There was nothing. There was nothing. So what does he do? Same thing he did all the time last year. Roll out to his right, get to the sideline, and just fling it across his body to the middle of the field and hope someone comes down with it. And it was picked off. Thankfully, that got called back because of a questionable roughing the passer call. He really sold that there. He sold that he was hurt. But then that got called back, and he got to live another down. But still, if he doesn't sell that, if he doesn't get pushed down for no reason, that's a turnover. So we should still talk about that, because it, up until that point, until the stupid push at the end, that was a play that would have stood. And that's, seriously, like I said, we saw that so many times last year. And that was the talking point all off season, was he's going to use his checkdowns. He's going to, you know, trust his receivers to pick up more yards. He's just going to get the ball to his receivers, and he's going to be a smarter football player. If there's nothing there, he's not going to take off and run all the time. He's not going to force the deep ball. He's just going to throw the ball into, you know, the upper deck because of his arm strength. But to see him in the preseason, in a preseason game, the dress rehearsal preseason game, to see that old habit return like that, like, because it's a habit. That's what it is. That's what he's been doing since he was in Wyoming, when he was better than all the Mountain West players, was just roll out, throw it to the middle of the field, see if something happens. And you can't do that in the NFL. You cannot do that consistently. You can't do it at all, because more often than not, 99% of the time, it's going to end in a bad play for your team, whether it be an interception or just an incompletion. You are rarely going to come down with a completion out of that. And if you do, it's an anomaly. That's not the norm. So to see that all offseason, the talking point has been, no, I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm not going to hurdle players. I'm not going to roll out and throw it to the middle of the field. I'm going to be smarter. I'm going to take what the defense gives me and throw the ball away if there's nothing there. And to see that all go out the window in one preseason snap, to see him just roll out and just do it again, the bad habit returns, it's concerning. It really is, because I'm not going to say he was all talk all offseason, because, I mean, we have seen him take what the defense has given him throughout the preseason, but to see that old habits do die hard, and to see that if he starts rolling out just to find some space, that old habit's going to come back. He it's just what he does. He's going to just go to the sideline, and instead of chucking the ball or just getting, even taking a sack there, you don't want to do that either, but I'd rather him take a sack than throw a pick over the middle of the field. So, yeah, the stat line suggests it was just an okay game, but I'll say it was a bad game just because, yeah, it was a bad game. You cannot be doing that. And then, like you said, the timing routes with Cole Beasley. He threw an awful ball. It might have been like the first or second play of the game. Cole Beasley ran an out or a whatever route.
Yeah.
Ran forward and then ran out and towards the sideline. And
it's called an out route.
Out.
That's what I said. I said he ran an out, and then I second-guessed myself, like Josh Allen. But,
ooh.
Yeah, but then, yeah, that was a bad throw. He had a decent throw. I don't remember who it was to, but it was in the middle of the field, and he got the ball right where it needed to be. That was his best throw of the day. But
probably John Brown.
Probably, but the goods or the cons outweighed the pros for me in this game. So, Rich, anything to add about good old Josh Allen here?
Yeah, I mean, if you take away, he had back-to-back throws to John Brown. It was 18 yards and 17 yards. That was 71% of his passing yardage on two plays on winded guys at the end of the second and the end of the second quarter in the first half. You can't have that. You granted the Bills did have a very running oriented game plan. They wanted to see what they have with the running attack and go from there and then pass it secondarily. But at the same time, when you're 3 for 6 and your two completions come that late in the second quarter, there's something you've got to fix. And it does come down to decision-making, where whether he's taking off and running with it or whether he's, you know, finding guys that are not playing hero ball, you know, he needs to squash this stuff out before the regular season starts, because you have, granted, you're going to New York or New Jersey, technically. You got a back-to-back weeks on the road. You've got to have this squashed out. I mean, it needs, you'd think it would have been handled going into the third preseason week of the year. Like you said, it's a dress rehearsal, but it's somewhat concerning. But, you know, at the same time, he did lead two drives, you know, that scored touchdowns, which is huge, because the Bills in the past, they weren't getting those touchdowns. They were getting field goals more often than not. And when you have that starting offense on the field and Allen is able to get, you know, two touchdowns out of his offense, regardless if he's throwing it, that's good to see, I guess. But still, overall, got to work on it.
D'Lo, anything to add on Allen?
The big thing with Allen, I mean, the challenge is that he only threw six passes. So it's obviously very easy to scrutinize each of these throws because there's not a lot going on. It's just that one hero ball play, that was like the one obvious thing that should have been launched into like the fifth row of the crowd. And when he tried to throw that ball and try, like, Robert Foster was covered by three guys. I mean, it harkens back to the Green Bay game when he launched the one ball into the end zone. It was so obvious what should have been done on that play. And for him to, like, break away from that was just really worrisome, because you're in a one-possession game. And if that interception stands, I mean, who knows what Matt Stafford could do. I mean, who knows if it ends up being a touchdown. We don't know. I mean, Matt Prater ended up, like, going crazy and hitting a 61-yard field goal later. So
classic Matt Prater.
That's why that was just, you know, we're making a big deal out of that one play, but I think there's a lot behind it that just did not need to happen on that play. He rolled out.
Yeah.
He should have just thrown it in the sidelines, and then we punt it away, and we have our punter battle. Instead, we have an interception and just a ridiculous roughing the passer call for playing two-hand touch.
Like I said, even if you don't want to throw the ball away there, just give up on the play. If you don't want to throw it away, run out of bounds or get sacked. I don't care either. Just throw it
throw
away
it
there.
Away. I don't even want the sack.
I was screaming.
I don't want the sack. Just throw the damn ball away. It was so, the play was extended so long that his brain should have said, okay, this is not happening.
Yeah, he had 10 seconds to think about
like
throwing
this
the ball away, and he didn't.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Dude, that was a bad play. Yeah. That's seriously, I'm not going to say Allen's going to have a bad year because of that one play. I think he's showed a lot of promise this offseason, this preseason. I think that he is in for a breakout year. But like you said, Rich, that should have been eliminated from his game months ago. That should have been eliminated from his game last year or while he was in college. There's a motorcycle. Nice.
Sick.
But that shouldn't have been carried over with him into the NFL. Yet here we are in year two, and the habit's still there. He's still doing it. So that kind of leads me to believe that it's almost mental with him. Is okay, if I don't see anything, I'm just going to resort to rolling out and throwing it over the middle of the field, because he's done it so many times, even though he's probably been told not to. So that's just... That's the takeaway of the whole game for me, was that bad, bad play. So, Rich, what's your bad takeaway?
I'd say the bad of that game was coaching, honestly. I think the Bills came out, they looked sloppy. I mean, you can chalk that up to, I mean, there's more players on the roster than we've seen in the past going into this late in the preseason, where, you know, the cutdown period is later. So that might be a part of it. But the Bills had double-digit penalties for the second straight preseason game. They had 11 against Carolina, and they had 12 this Friday, you know, 106 yards in penalty yards.
And that's just accepted.
Exactly. Yeah. And you can't be doing this, you know, this late in the preseason. I get it. It's preseason, but it comes down to discipline, and it comes down to playing smart. And a lot of these calls are just, why are you doing that? Why are you putting yourself in that position? And it also, you know, the Bills didn't play in all three facets of the game. Their special teams look pretty bad. I mean, Andre Roberts is the one shining spot of Bills special teams. I mean, Hauschka looked okay, but they're really not playing as a team, as a unit right now. And they won, you know, the scoreboard tells you they won 24-20, but that was an incredibly sloppy performance. And to have 12 penalties is not great. You know, they need to clean it up. I think it'll be done. It'll be, you know, minimized a bit once the regular season comes, but really, it just comes down to coaching and game management.
Yeah, I think, like, you brought it up. Just, there are a lot of players on the roster, players who will not be seeing the field come the regular season. So, hopefully you can attribute it, the penalty issues to them just being out of sync, which that might be it. But, hey, I don't know. I hope they get this figured out, because I remember it might have been a Rex Ryan year, but it may have also been Sean McDermott's first year. There was a year, might have been both, to be honest. There was a year where they just, penalties, week in and week out, so many penalties, which, that's not fun football to watch. I think we all do this, we all write about football and talk about football because we love football. And when football's not fun to watch, this isn't fun to do. So, hopefully, the penalties, the Bills eliminate the penalties from their game, and obviously they're still going to take some penalties, but excessively, hopefully they get that under control, and the games aren't a snooze. Honestly, the highlight of this game for me was when a transformer blew outside my house in the third quarter, and my TV was black for 5 minutes, and I didn't have to watch it, so that was fun. D'Lo, anything to say about the penalties, or no?
No, it's just... it was just bad to watch on, you know, what was it, Friday night? I don't even remember.
Yeah, whatever.
Friday,
it was.
Thursday night, whatever. It's a blur. It was yeah. You know, this team, like, there's a lot of just, like, lazy penalties, too. You know, like, lazy holds, pre-snap penalties, just things that just are mental. So hopefully that gets fixed up. Hopefully when they decide what their offensive line's going to look like, if Mitch Morris ever, you know, officially can come on the field, that'll help with the offensive line. I mean, there's a lot of little things that I think will help out. But, man, just there were just so many penalties, and they just hold so much. It's mind-blowing. Yeah,
LeSean McCoy and Frank Gore both had big runs.
Negated by holding, yeah.
Yeah. And I saw somebody tweet, like, well, they had big runs called back by holds. And it's like, well, why do you think the holes were open? It's because there was holding on the play, but okay, whatever. I wanted to write an article after the game, like, Bills regressed to 3-0 on the preseason with win over Lions, but I would have gotten killed over that headline, because really it doesn't make any sense, but it's accurate. It's... The whole team, the defense looked good, but just in general, there weren't many positive takeaways from this game, besides the three that we talked about. But I think that's... I think that'll wrap it up for the preseason talk. This comes out on Tuesday, 2 days before the final preseason game, so this will all be outdated, but that's a lot of fun. That's fine. Yeah, we're going to now do a 50-minute preview for... Who do they play in the final week?
Minnesota.
But,
Oh, yeah, don't you know?
Oh, yeah. I think... that wraps it up for Bill's preseason talk. Has Clowney been traded? Have we gotten Clowney news in the last 53 minutes here? I don't think we have.
No.
I don't see any Schefter stuff. Lamar Miller torn ACL. Yeah, we got that yesterday, Schefter. Jeez. So I think it's time for Buffalo's favorite segment. Everyone loves this segment of the Kyle Selig Variety Hour. It's Buffalo Fight Night. I even had a tweet last week, right? Somebody tweeted at me telling me about Buffalo Fight Night and who would actually win in the fight. And they wrote it out, why Cam Newton would lose to Ed Oliver in an MMA fight, even bringing in Cam's shoulder injury. And Ed Oliver would get him to the ground and it would be over.
Very nice.
Yeah, I love that type of insight. It's the type of insight you don't even get on this podcast. But this is like the third time we're talking about Ed Oliver on Buffalo Fight Night. But there was a picture over the week of... Harrison Phillips, it was Harrison Phillips, and Ed Oliver lined up next to each other or across from each other with fists up. They were going to go. So, guys, we'll go to you, D'Lo. Who wins, Harrison Phillips or Ed Oliver in a sanctioned MMA fight in the octagon?
I'm going Ed Oliver.
Ooh.
I'm going to go Ed. I think Ed's going to get him down. He's going to grapple. Last week I picked Ed over Cam Newton, and I'm going with Ed again. I think Houston takes down Stanford.
Rich, who wins?
I honestly think it'll be close. You know, Harrison Phillips has that background of wrestling, which could factor into an MMA fight. But I still think Ed Oliver is just too quick. He's got a little size advantage over Phillips. I think that Oliver would end up winning, but it'd be close. It'd be a good fight.
I said on a previous episode that I don't think there's a player on the Bills roster who could beat Ed Oliver in a sanctioned MMA fight. But I think I've been proven wrong. I think Harrison Phillips could beat Ed Oliver. Because, like you said, Rich, the wrestling background. He was a decorated wrestler. Sean McDermott almost challenged him to a wrestling match during the pre-draft meeting. And that would have been Harrison Phillips would have killed the man. So
if Harrison Phillips beats McDermott in a wrestling match, is he just automatically named head coach?
Yes.
Yes, that's the rule. It's written somewhere in the CBA that if the coach is beaten in a wrestling match by anyone, by any challenger, they become coach. But I think that's a fight he would lose. Again, he has probably the strength advantage, speed advantage, but nothing beats training. And Harrison's got the training. Good wrestler. Probably could win in the octagon against at least Ed Oliver. But hey, I don't know. My logic kind of takes a turn because I said Ed Oliver could beat anyone, but I said Harrison could beat Ed Oliver, and then I could think of players who could beat Harrison. So the logic doesn't make sense, but that's Buffalo Fight Night. This segment doesn't make sense. So here we are, guys.
That's the way we like it.
it's a great podcast because in general, just consistent excellence here. And we're 56 minutes deep again, perfect. So that means we got to wrap it up. Make sure to follow Bills Wire on all social media platforms. That's at the Bills Wire on some of them and at Bills Wire on others. make sure you follow D'Lo on Twitter. D'Lo, what's your Twitter?
It's at J DeLauro. It's very exciting to come interact with you all. And there's one more thing I just want to say too. The Variety Hour, since we've existed, the Bills are undefeated.
Wow. Oh, you're right.
There is a correlation.
Yes.
Bills are going to the Super Bowl, confirmed.
There it is, 16-0.
Confirmed. Rich, what's your Twitter?
At by Rich Kowalski.
Good. You can follow me on Twitter at Kyle Selegi. Make sure to read the Bills Wire articles on BillsWire.usatoday.com. Make sure to listen to the Bills Wire podcasts hosted by Matt and Jeremy. They do good work. They just did a recap of the Bills Lions game. So if you want a bit more in depth recap of now last week's game, 2 days before the next one, you can go listen to it. They might even post another one between now and then. Who knows? I don't. So I think that wraps it up for us here today. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next week. Goodbye.